This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Some scientists say that you can't talk about the global refugee crisis without talking about another crisis, climate change. Edward Miguel is an economics researcher at UC Berkeley who warns that as the planet heats up, we'll be seeing more wars and more mass migration. He visited KELW to tell me the bad news in person. We just heard a story about a refugee from Syria. And I was wondering, you've done a lot of research on the link between climate change and war, climate change and violence, climate change. What is the link now between possibly climate change and refugees, people forced to leave their homes at this time?
Yeah, there's really a growing body of evidence that extreme climate disrupts the economy in many different ways. In poor societies where people rely on agriculture, when the rains fail or there's extreme drought, extreme temperature, and they can't farm their land, they're very often displaced. They move to cities. They go somewhere where they can earn a living when their crops fail. So years of extreme climate are also very often years of displacement. And you mentioned Syria. There's research that's come out recently documenting that in the run-up to the start of the civil war in Syria in 2011, actually the 3 years before the civil war, were the 3 years of most extreme drought in recorded history in Syria. And so during that period of 2008 to 2011, something like half of the livestock in Syria died, hundreds of thousands of farmers couldn't make a living on their land. And of course, there are many factors that have contributed to the war in Syria, but this economic shock of extreme drought could have played a role in precipitating some of the violence. When people are poor and desperate and hungry, it may be easier to recruit them into militias or insurgency groups, and they're a displaced population with nowhere to go.
And so what about global warming? What relationship would that have to unrest?
So we've looked at this relationship with co-authors, with my co-authors Solomon Shang and Marshall Burke here at Berkeley and at Stanford, and found a very strong link between extreme temperature and violence of many different forms. So civil wars are more likely to break out in sub-Saharan Africa following a very hot year. And again, the economic channel and the fact that at very high temperatures, crops don't do well and the economy is disrupted is probably part of the story, but it's much broader than that.
Is it mostly about the crops, the heat in relation to crops, or other things as well?
Yeah, so the evidence that's coming out recently suggests it goes beyond agriculture. So if we look at the effect of extreme climate and extreme temperatures on the economy, agriculture suffers when there's extreme climate. Most people would expect that because, you know, crops are sensitive to climate. Mm-hmm. But even non-agricultural economic activity is very sensitive to temperature. So, Indian factory workers' productivity, it's been shown, falls when temperatures are high. In the U.S., people have looked at the labor productivity of people who work outside, of manual labor. It falls when temperatures are higher. So there's an agricultural channel and a non-agricultural channel, and both of those contribute to worse economic conditions when it gets hot.
So you looked at the relationship between temperature and violence, and we talked about that. How did you do that study? How did you conduct it?
So this was a really great learning experience for me. We decided to go beyond our own research with my co-authors, with Solomon Shang and Marshall Burke. We had all worked on this issue separately on different projects. I've been working on civil war in Africa. Saul had been working on El Nino, actually a very relevant thing for our California audience. Saul showed that the global El Nino cycle, which leads to warming in some parts of the world in some years and cooling in others, actually explains a lot of the onset of new civil wars in poor parts of the world. Hmm. So in those hot El Nino years, we get a lot of rain here, but in other parts of the world, they're very dry and hot. It really depends on where you are. In those very hot El Nino years, you see spikes in civil conflict. They can explain something like a quarter of new civil conflicts in the world over the last few decades. So we'd each been doing our own thing, but we wanted a more systematic answer. So we dug around for all the research we could find, published or unpublished, from economics, political science, history, psychology, like these psychology lab studies I was talking about before. And archaeologists have actually found that in the long run, these long-term warming and drying trends are associated with the collapse of several major human civilizations. So a major empire in the Middle East, the Akkadian Empire, collapsed following a major drought. the Maya Empire here, you know, in the Americas, in Mexico, collapsed after a century with three mega droughts, like unprecedented, historically unprecedented droughts. Angkor Wat in Cambodia collapsed following a huge drought, et cetera. So there's this historical body of evidence, and we put it all together. There were 60 studies, quantitative studies with data, and they paint this remarkably consistent picture. Almost all of them have this finding that high temperatures lead to more violence.
And what about violence on a personal level?
So if we look at the U.S., if there's a hot week or a hot month in a particular city, crime rates rise. There's sort of conventional wisdom in the U.S. that that may be the case. If you've seen, you know, Do the Right Thing, you know, the hottest night of the summer, things got overheated. Mm-hmm. People lost their head. But that's a systematic pattern. If there's a hot month in a U.S. city, an exceptionally hot month, there's more murder, there's more assault, et cetera. So
and
those
why?
Are channels. Yeah, those are channels that can't really be economic.
Right.
Like day to day, month to month, it isn't like it's a little hot in the city. Our incomes are going to fall. So that's where psychological or physiological channels have to be important. This is a problem that may not have a simple solution because there's an economic channel, there's a psychological channel, and these things could reinforce each other.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you hoping will happen next with this body of research?
First of all, we want to be heard so that the evidence is out there and policymakers understand the implications of continued warming. So if the research can nudge policymakers, push them even a little bit in the direction of more renewable energy, fewer CO2 emissions, that's something we would really want to happen. So I think we have a long way to go. And again, the fear is our projections on the link between climate and violence go out to about 2050. And
that's it.
We're going to keep warming. Yeah, I mean, over that, you know, multi-decadal scale, we're going to keep warming. So we've got to learn how to deal with it and adapt to it, even though the best solution would be to not warm in the first place. So I think, you know, both on the mitigation front, the reduction of emissions, and the adaptation front, I think the research can inform policy. And my dream would be that it gives policymakers more of a will to change, that it pushes them in a direction and really forces them to look into the abyss here about where we're going if we warm by 3 or 4 or more degrees Celsius, which is possible. That would be a very different world than the world we live in today.